tired. While he was asleep, I kissed him, first on his cheek, then on his prickly sideburns, then on his mouth, which wasn't prickly at all. Even though the mouth is a dirty place, he wasn't afraid of my germs. "Go ahead, dear. Stand up and say your name and one thing you did this summer. Don't be shy." Shy. That was a trick. Like the kids on the playground daring each other, saying, "What are you, chicken?" My heart was thumping inside my ears so loud, but I wasn't chicken. I just wasn't stupid enough to fall for Mrs. Norton's trick. "Mrs. Norton," said Caroline Peters. "You've already had your turn, Caroline." "That's Wavy Quinn. She can't talk." "She most certainly can talk. She chooses not to talk. And if she persists with that behavior in my classroom, it's going to earn her a mark on the board." Mrs. Norton walked to the chalkboard and wrote, "Wavonna Quinn," in the upper right corner. After recess, she wrote, "Jimmy Didier." He got a mark for talking too much. You were only allowed to talk exactly as much as Mrs. Norton wanted you to. Every day was like that. My name wasn't always the first one on the board, but it always went on the board. If it wasn't on the board before lunch, it went on after, because Mrs. Norton said I had to eat lunch. She wanted to see me eat lunch. One day I wrote my own name on the board after lunch. The way I wrote my W was prettier, with arches on both sides and a loop in the middle. Grandma made W's like that. Mrs. Norton clenched her teeth and said, "You are a very disrespectful young lady." Then she erased my name. She wrote it with a plain W and put a mark next to it. Not eating lunch. Being disrespectful. After 9 weeks, my report card had a list of every day Mrs. Norton wrote my name on the board and why. Kellen registered me for school, so I gave him Mrs. Norton's report of bad things. After dinner, he sat at the kitchen table with Donald on his lap and read the list. He frowned so hard while he was signing Liam's name, I thought maybe he was mad at me. I put Donald to bed, and when I came back, Kellen was still scowling at my report card.
"Come here. I'm not mad at you."
I went to the table and leaned against his shoulder so he could put his arm around me. For a while, we stared at my report card.
"When I was in school, they used to paddle kids," Kellen said. "I used to get sent to the principal's office all the time. Between him and my pa, they used to whoop me so bad I couldn't sit down sometimes. They don't still paddle kids, do they?"
I didn't know, but I shook my head so he would stop looking worried. The next day, when I came out of school, Kellen was waiting for me, but he'd put the pan head on its kickstand.
"I want to talk to that teacher of yours," he said.
Mama walking through the halls had been scary, her high heels clicking on the tiles, quick, 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 going to tear somebody a new asshole. Kellen took long, slow steps that I could keep up with. In the classroom, Mrs. Norton kept writing while Kellen waited, but she couldn't trick him into talking first. He could wait all day.
"May I help you?" she said.
"I'm here about Wavy's report card."
"I know you." Mrs. Norton squinted and made her mouth small. Kellen shrugged, but she nodded. "You're one of those barfoot boys."
"What about it? I had your brother in my class."
"What are you doing here?"
"I told you. I came to talk to you about Wavy's report card," Kellen said.
"I don't see how it's any of your business. If the Quinns are concerned, they're certainly welcome to come see me."
"I'm responsible for Wavy, and I want to know what this report card means."
Kellen's voice got louder, and Mrs. Norton gave him her meanest look. When she looked at me like that, I knew she wanted to do a lot worse than write my name on the board.
"It means that we have a serious behavioral problem with Wavy."
"I don't know what you mean when you write being disrespectful. She doesn't smart off."
"What am I to call it when she disobeys me every single day? I know the sort of young man you are, the sort of boy your brother was. You think defying authority is cool. I don't see that it's gotten you very far. I know it didn't get your brother very far. How long has he been in prison?"
"A while now."
Kellen's jaw got tight and he wasn't looking at Mrs. Norton anymore. Seeing how her eyes burned when she looked at his lucky tattoo, I put my hand on his arm to cover up as much of it as I could. I wanted to protect him, but he frowned.
"This ain't got nothing to do with my brother," he said.
"Ain't got nothing?" Obviously, you were never in my class, Mr. Barfoot. I would have cured you of that lamentable turn of phrase, one way or another. I just don't see why you made this whole list. You wrote down, didn't eat lunch, like 50 times. She's not doing it to disobey you. She just don't like eating in front of folks. She doesn't eat lunch because she's allowed to do as she pleases. She's 11 years old, and from her behavior in my class, I suspect she's allowed to rule the roost. Does anyone ever say no to her? How can eating lunch get graded? Because it represents a serious behavioral problem that you are indulging. Kellen's voice got too big for the classroom. God damn, that's fucking bullshit. Mr. Barfoot, are you in the habit of speaking that way in front of Wavy? It's not like she's gonna repeat it. That is exactly what I mean. Perhaps she doesn't talk because you think it's funny. Kellen hauled himself up, and I wished for him to smack Mrs. Norton, the way he once smacked Danny for smoking a joint in the shop bay. Kellen slapped the side of his head, knocking the joint on the floor. Then he grounded into the greasy concrete. I wanted to see Mrs. Norton ground into the concrete. It's no use talking to you. You're like every teacher I ever had, Kellen said. Do you think Wavy will make anything of herself if you plant a hatred of school in her? She doesn't hate school. She just hates you. I don't blame her. Mrs. Norton tisk-tisked at us while we walked away. Outside, Kellen swung his leg over the bike and sat down hard. I'm sorry I embarrassed you. I didn't even think about that stupid tattoo. I should have covered it up like I did when I went to court. I was trying to make things better, and all I did was make it worse. I shrugged. If I was already failing sixth grade, it couldn't get much worse.
5. Miss Degrassi. December 1980. Lisa Degrassi only went to the party because John Lennon was dead, and she was out of wine. Powell County was dry, and she couldn't face the night sober. The party was in a double-wide trailer out in the country, where Stacy's Pinto rattled over ruts in the dirt road until Lisa thought her teeth would fall out. Inside, the trailer was decorated like a penthouse. Leather couches, glass coffee tables, and chandeliers. A trailer with chandeliers. Walking into the party, Lisa expected the worst. Bad music and people she knew. The Rolling Stones played at high volume while people danced awkwardly. Stacy had been right about the refreshments on offer, though. There was a bar full of booze, free for the taking, and a coffee table cluttered with bongs and pipes and pills. The kind of party Lisa never went to, because she was always afraid of running into a student's parents.
It's not even in Powell County, it's in Belton County. Stacy had said, like that made all the difference in the world. She came from a nearby town even smaller than Powell. Lisa stood in the middle of the pounding music, downing free drinks, and when someone offered her a lit joint, she accepted. Later, when someone offered her a line of coke to snort, she thought, "Who cares if someone sees me? Who fucking cares?"
"Oops, watch that sleeve or you'll make a mess," said the man who'd cut the line of coke.
He leaned over her, catching the loose sleeve of her peasant blouse so she wouldn't drag it through the fine white dust. Then he said,
"You want to go easy. That's meth, not coke."
Lisa hesitated, and instead of snorting the line, she let the rolled bill slip out of her hand onto the coffee table. She stood up, confused to find the man smiling at her. He was blonde and tanned, with bright blue eyes and perfect white teeth. Powell County's own Beau Duke. Or Belton County's? "Hi," she said.
"Hi. I don't think I've seen you around before."
"No, I don't go out much."
"You should."
He slipped his hand inside her sleeve to touch her bare arm. His fingers were warm, tracing hypnotic patterns. She felt dizzy and nauseated. The baseline thundered in the bottom of her stomach.
"Excuse me, is there... where's the powder room?"
"Just right on down that hallway. Second door on the left."
"Thank you."
Lisa was already turning to go, but the man bent over and kissed her hand with a grin.
Although she never trusted those kinds of men, there was something tempting about him. A handsome stranger on a lonely night. He wasn't wearing a wedding ring. Wobbling in her strappy sandals, Lisa worked her way through the party to the bathroom where she broke down crying again. Mascara dribbled down her cheeks and left gray splotches on her pale blue blouse. She had to stop thinking about John Lennon bleeding to death on the sidewalk. If she'd been in Hartford, she could have taken the train into New York and laid flowers at the Dakota, or gone to the vigil in Central Park. She could have shared her grief, instead of tamping it down in some hillbilly drug dealer's bathroom. When someone rattled the door, Lisa tore off some toilet paper and cleaned up her mascara as best she could. After giving up the bathroom to a woman in a fringed cowgirl shirt and a raccoon's mask of eye makeup, Lisa couldn't face the party again. She worked her way down the hall using the wall as support and ducked into the kitchen. In the middle of the room stood a blonde woman wearing short shorts and a halter top. She looked like nothing so much as a redneck Marilyn Monroe. In her hands she held a Rubik's Cube that she was twisting furiously, not trying to solve it, but scrambling it. Liam Quinn sat at the kitchen table taking a drag off a joint. So much for not running into any student's parents. If anything, he was bigger, uglier, and greasier than he had been the day Lisa met him. "Okay, okay," the blonde said. She held out the cube and Mr. Quinn traded her the joint for it. Since he hadn't seen her yet, Lisa was about to turn around and leave, but the blonde caught her by the arm and said, "Have you seen this? You have to see this. It's crazy." "The Rubik's Cube," Lisa assumed. "My brother has one," she said. "He had to take it apart and put it back together to solve it." "No, no, look. He can totally do it. Look!" The blonde pointed excitedly. Lisa looked. The first thing that struck her was how ridiculously small the Rubik's Cube was in Mr. Quinn's hands. Then she realized he was actually solving the stupid thing. He had two sides done and was gaining on a third. Lisa and the blonde stood in rapt attention as he worked through it. When he finished, he raised his head and blushed.
"Hey, Mr. Grassy,"
he mumbled. "Hi." "Oh, you guys know each other?" the blonde said. Lisa still hoped she could escape without being identified, but Mr. Quinn said,
"This is Miss Degrassi. She was Wavy's teacher in third grade."
"You can just call me Lisa, since we're not in school." The blonde giggled and said, "Oh, how fun! I'm glad you came. Too bad Wavy's not here." Presented with that horrific idea, Lisa stared at the blonde, trying to figure out if she should know her. There was no way she was Wavy's mother. All the hair bleach in the world couldn't bring about that kind of transformation.
Okay, you try it now,"
the blonde said. She took the cube out of Mr. Quinn's hand and gave it to Lisa. For a moment, Lisa stared at it, feeling strangely disconnected from her own hands. Was that the marijuana? Because the blonde looked at her expectantly, Lisa turned the cube's squares into random order. When she had it as mixed up as she could, she put it back in Mr. Quinn's hands. It wasn't a fluke. He solved the puzzle again in just a few minutes.
"Oh my God," the blonde said. "I can't believe how you do that."
Against her natural instincts, Lisa was impressed too. She'd spent hours on her brothers at Thanksgiving and never managed to solve more than one side at a time. Just as she reached for the Rubik's Cube, wanting to see Mr. Quinn solve it again, she heard the opening bars of Bungalow Bill. A second later, she was crying in a stranger's kitchen. She turned to leave but bumped into someone in the doorway. Whoever he was caught her by the arms and said,
"Hey, are you okay?"
"I just went to go home. I want to go home," she said.
Abruptly, Bungalow Bill cut out and was replaced by the opening bars of Another One Bites the Dust at full volume for the 10th time that night. She plunged into the party, tears pouring down her face. If Stacy was there, Lisa couldn't see her or her zebra-patterned off-the-shoulder blouse.
It seemed like everyone had the same tall, frosted hair. Lisa turned a slow circle, scanning the room, until Mr. Quinn touched her elbow and said,
"I'll take you home."
He held her arm all the way across the gravel drive. 2 hours before, the tall, strappy sandals had just been silly. Now that Lisa was drunk, high, and crying again, they were dangerous. The car he took her to was boxed in on all sides by other cars. She squeezed the bridge of her nose hard to cut off more tears.
"Damn it, I just want to go home," she whispered.
"I guess we're on the bike then."
He led her out of the maze of cars to a metal garage where half a dozen motorcycles were parked. Lisa hesitated. She'd ridden on the back of her brother's cheap little Honda a few times, but this was something else entirely.
"Here."
Mr. Quinn pulled a leather jacket off the back of the bike and held it out for her.
"If you really want to go home, this is it."
"I do."
She let him help her into the jacket and zip it up to her neck. It was an unexpectedly intimate act from a near stranger, and it hinted at what it might be like putting on a bearskin coat. Heavy, warm, and permeated by a wild, musky smell. The cold was brutal but exhilarating, too. She clasped her hands around his waist and curled her fingers against the warmth of his belly, which was only protected from the cold by a thin layer of cotton.
"Where am I taking you?"
he said over his shoulder. "I'm on Grove and 6th and Powell." After that, they rode in silence. Maybe that was typical on a motorcycle, but it unnerved Lisa. She had forgotten about his impenetrable silence, he and his daughter both. Silence, and worse, was waiting for her at home.
"Can we stop and get a drink or something?"
she said, raising her voice to be sure he could hear.
"You haven't had enough?"
"No, I'm sorry, Mr. Quinn. Just take me home."
"You know, I'm not really Liam Quinn."
Lisa stared at the white line whizzing by. Was it a joke?
"Who are you if you're not Liam Quinn?" she shouted into the rushing wind.
"I'm Jesse Joe Kellen. I work for Liam."
"Wait, what? What does that mean?"
"I do some work for him. I'm not him. You saw him there. He's the blonde guy. Looks like a movie star. Wears them pointy-toed cowboy boots."
The hand kisser who'd offered Lisa a line of meth to snort.
"Do you still want another drink? Last one this side of Powell."
He slowed the bike as a roadside tavern came into view.
"Yes,"
Lisa said. There was probably never going to be enough liquor, but she was willing to try. The bar was the party once removed. The same people, the same music. As they walked in, the bouncer at the door said,
"Hey, Junior, I don't want no trouble tonight." "Just here for a drink,"
Mr. Quinn said. Not Mr. Quinn. Lisa didn't know what to call him. They sat at the bar and drank old fashions that were long on whiskey and short on sugar. She didn't care as long as they kept her drunk.
"So, Junior? Jesse Joe?"
"You can call me Kellen."
"Okay, Kellen. Why would you pretend to be Mr. Quinn?"
At least it was something to take her mind off John.
"Somebody has to. Not like Liam or Val is gonna go talk to Wavy's teacher."
"But why you?"
It was apparently a much larger question than Lisa realized, because he had to empty his drink and order another one before he could answer.
"Because Wavy's my responsibility. I take care of her. We take care of each other."
"Even though you're not related to her?" He laughed and drained his drink.
"We're friends is all."
Lisa looked at him more closely, squinting against the pall of smoke that hung in the bar. "How old are you?"
"I just turned 24,
he said. She stared at him, feeling stupid. He wasn't old enough to be Wavy's father. He was younger than Lisa. How had she mistaken him for an adult? They drank another round without talking. He gestured for the bartender to keep them coming.
"What got you so upset tonight?"
he said when the next drink came. John Lennon was killed on Monday. They shot him out in front of his apartment. Lisa thought she might finally be drunk enough because for the first time in days, Thinking about it didn't make her want to bawl her head off.
Who's that?
John Lennon? The Beatles?
Oh. Did you know him?
No, but, well, sort of. As a fan, I... He didn't get it, and Lisa was too drunk to explain how John had narrated her whole childhood and most of her adulthood so far. No matter where she went, John had gone with her, even to this horrible little town. Now he was dead and she was alone.
I'm sorry, Kellen said.
To his left, a guy in a cowboy hat laid a hand on Kellen's shoulder and said,
Can I squeeze in here for a second, Cochise?
Kellen knocked back the rest of his drink, set the glass on the bar and said,
You know what? Seeing as how you don't know me, why don't you just call me Sir?
Until then, Lisa had only considered him a curiosity, some previously undiscovered species of redneck biker Indian. At that moment, there was a menacing quality to the way he said Sir, with the whiskey still wet on his lower lip, that also made her consider him a possible solution to one night of loneliness. The cowboy tipped his hat with a smirk.
Whatever you say, Chief.
Kellen swung so fast that his fist whiffled the air beside Lisa's ear. When the blow landed on the cowboy's face, it was like a bomb going off. People jumped into the fight from all sides. Lisa was too stunned to do anything but put her head down over her drink and cover the back of her head with her hands.
God damn it, knock it off, you assholes!
Somebody yelled, and then from that same corner of the bar came the sound of a pump shotgun being racked. The scuffle came to an immediate halt. When Lisa looked up, she saw half a dozen men clustered around Kellen. They were all bloodied, and at their feet lay the cowboy, his hat trampled underfoot. Kellen's hair was mussed, and someone had torn his shirt and popped open half the snaps down the front, revealing a solid-looking gut and a giant tattoo on his chest. The man with the shotgun waded through the crowd.
God damn it, Junior, what'd I tell you? You're gonna get yourself banned again. Sorry, Glenn. I was just trying to teach him some manners,
Kellen said, snapping his shirt up.
Manners my ass! Get out of here before I call the sheriff. Will do.
Kellen pulled a wad of bills from his pocket and tossed a $100 bill on the bar. He glanced at Lisa and said,
You ready to go?
I think so. She had never witnessed a bar fight, and she walked out on Kellen's arm, unsure whether she had yet. She hadn't seen anything beyond the first punch, but she felt sure that was permanently imprinted on her brain. Powell in a snapshot, drunk hillbillies beating the crap out of each other. When they pulled up in front of Lisa's house, Kellen turned off the engine. Panic engulfed her. She had not, in fact, invited him to spend the night, but there he was, getting off the motorcycle and reaching to help her down. I'm fine from here, she said.
Could have fooled me. You couldn't walk yourself out of the bar. You're welcome to try, though.
She leaned on him all the way to the front porch, and once the door was unlocked, she remembered how empty the house was. Do you want to come in? I could make you some coffee.
If you don't mind, he said,
right before she kissed him. With all the whiskey, it was hard to tell where her mouth ended and his began. He pulled back after just a few seconds and said,
We should go inside.
Of course, he was right. No sense advertising her shame and desperation to the whole town. She stepped backward into the dark entry and he followed. Let me go put some coffee on. Turning toward the kitchen, she nearly wiped out, the floor going crooked under her. He caught her under the arms and brought her upright.
Why don't you sit down and I'll put the coffee on?
It was ridiculous, but she nodded. He steered her to the couch and then went into the kitchen. She slumped there, listening to him rattle around in drawers and cupboards. A few minutes later, the smell of coffee wafted out to the living room. He came in from the kitchen carrying two mugs and handed her one of them. Then he stood there, sipping his coffee, and looked around at the dirty wine glasses. Empty bottles and record albums spread all over the rug. Having him witness the messiness of her grief embarrassed Lisa, and it seemed to bother him, too. He seemed to be thinking about cleaning it up until she set her coffee mug aside and patted the spot on the sofa next to her.
So, where are you from?
he said as he sat down. Connecticut. I went to school there, too. I'd never been west of the Mississippi until I took this job. How long have you lived in Powell?
Forever. I was born 6 blocks north of here, just across from the grain elevators.
No offense, but I hate this town. His only answer was a shrug. There's nothing to do. Nobody I have anything in common with. Stacy, the girl I came to the party with, we're only friends because everybody else our age is already married with kids, and everybody knows everybody's business. I can't even go on a date without everybody knowing about it.
Kellen leaned forward to set his mug on the coffee table. Lisa scooted closer, so that when he sat back, their arms brushed together. She turned her head up to him as a hint, but he didn't kiss her.
Would you take some advice if I give it to you?
He said. Now that she knew how old he was, his tone of voice rankled, more paternal than he had any right to act.
You need to figure out how to live here, or you need to get the hell out. I was you, I'd leave. Go on back to Connecticut.
Kellen.
Miss DeGrassi asked me to stay the night, but I could see how she'd regret it as quick as she sobered up, and I'd likely regret it sooner than that. After I left her place, I should have gone home, as much as I'd had to drink. I should have taken my own advice and got the hell out of Powell. Except for Wavy. She kept me there. More than that, she kept me tethered, not just to Powell, but to being alive. In the whole world, she was the only person who cared whether I lived or died. If there was anybody who remembered tonight, it was her. When I pulled into the drive at the farmhouse, there was a light on in the kitchen. I hoped it wasn't Val, because I didn't need that kind of grief. I was doing the best I could for Wavy, and Val always treated me like garbage. I walked through the door, not sure what I was going to find. But there sat Wavy reading a book. On the table in front of her was a chocolate cake with candles stuck in it. "You made me a cake," I said. She put a finger up to her lips, so I reckoned Val and Donald must be asleep. I didn't even know what time it was. While I took off my coat and pulled out a chair to sit, Wavy went to get the box of matches off the stove. On the way back to the table, she stopped at the chair I'd put my jacket over. Leaning down till her nose was almost touching the collar, she took a long whiff of it. I started to laugh until I figured out what she was doing. Wavy wasn't sniffing my coat because it smelled like me. It must have smelled like Miss DeGrassi. "I've been down to Liam's party," I said. She nodded and climbed up in the chair across from me. After she lit the candles, I let them burn for a while, just to look at them reflected in Wavy's eyes. When the wax started to run down to the cake, I blew out the candles in one big go. The knife was there to cut the cake, but neither of us reached for it. "You want to know what I wished for?"
"Won't come true if you say,"
she said in this husky voice. "I don't believe that. Lean across here and I'll whisper it to you." She got up on her knees in the chair and put her hands on the table to lean across. I put my hands on either side of the cake and met her halfway. I put my mouth up to her ear, like I was going to whisper something, but all I did was blow a big puff of air into her hair like it was more candles. She ducked her head down against my chest and started laughing, so I kissed the only part of her I could reach, the top of her head. "It already came true. You remembered my birthday," I said. "And I got cake."
6. Kellen. July 1981. Wavy walked around the garage bay looking at herself in the finish on the Barracuda. I picked the thing up cheap at an insurance auction and bought a new back end from a salvage yard down by Tulsa. For a good 6 months, Wavy had been watching me put it together in the evenings. I was all the time teasing her about how I was going to paint it Moulin Rouge. "That's a factory color," I'd say, just to get her to roll her eyes, thinking about me driving a pink car. I ended up painting it black with metallic gray striping. I'd planned to sell the car, but the way she looked at it once it was painted and ready to go, I wasn't sure.
She looked impressed. "Want to take it out?" I said. She nodded and gave me that squinty look of hers that meant, "Let's go fast." She was like me that way, kind of a speed fiend, and the CUDA was built for it. We took it easy out around the lake, taking in the view. But the damn thing was champing at the bit, so I took it out to Highway 9 and opened it up a little. Wavy leaned in the back seat, smiling, the wind blowing her hair around. I put my foot in the gas, kicked it up to about 80. Then we came over a hill damn near on top of a cop sitting on the shoulder. I braked hard, got it down to somewhere around 60 and coasted past the cop. I held my breath, but a mile on, the cop hadn't come after us. I looked over at Wavy, who'd sat up to see why we slowed down. "You tired?" I said. She shook her head. She was a night owl. "Feel like doing some drag racing?" Hell yeah, she did. We ran the CUDA into Geringer and down to the flatlands where they drag on the weekends. It's not legal, but the cops mostly look the other way because it keeps the draggers off the main roads. And if you're looking to sell a car like the CUDA, that's where you find buyers. The place was nothing but hard-packed dunes and old gravel pits, not a tree to cut the wind, and just ugly. When we pulled in, there were probably 30 cars, guys talking trash and checking out the competition. I parked and got out, went around to put up the hood, let people know I was thinking about selling. Behind me, I heard some guy say to his buddies, "Look, it's that big goddamn Indian." That was Billy, still wearing a letter jacket for football when he'd been out of high school longer than I had. "What are you driving tonight?" he said. "You're looking at it?" I didn't know him from anywhere else, but I'd seen him out there plenty of times when I had my 64 Polara. Summer before I met Wavy, I was out there nearly every weekend, dragging that old Dodge. While Billy and his buddies checked out the CUDA, Wavy came up and slipped her hand into mine. Right away, Billy got his eye on her. "Say, what's this little girl's mommy gonna do if you lose her in a race?"
"I ain't losing nothing tonight," I said.
"She's a little young for my taste," his buddy said, "but she'll be worth racing for in a couple years. I do like blondes."
Wavy glared at them, even though it was just a joke. Nobody ever won somebody else's girl. The drags were strictly about the money and the winning, showing your car was faster. I mean, I'd won plenty of races and only ever took home two girls. One was done with me as soon as she sobered up. The other one went home with a different guy every week. Billy wanted to put $50 on our race, so while me and him queued up for the track, Wavy headed off to where all the spectators were. The track was shaped like a D, a loop around the big gravel pit, then a quarter mile straightaway. It was a good track, except for this tight spot early on. About 100 yards from the start, the track cut into the side of a dune. It meant you had to ride close to the other car until you passed it. As I pulled up in the line, I glanced out of the corner of my eye and caught Wavy staring up at the stars. She was the prettiest girl there, easy, with her hair blowing back like a flag. Amazed me how fast she was growing up. She'd be 12 in a couple weeks, and she was going to be long-legged like Val. Every time I looked at her, the gap between the bottom of her skirt and the tops of her boots was bigger. As soon as I thought it, I got to worrying about all the other guys there looking at her and thinking the same thing. We had a minute before the flagger sent me and Billy around the loop to the straightaway, so I called her over. "Come and give me a kiss for good luck," I said. She walked over and rested her arm on the door panel. Leaning in through the window, she pressed her lips to the corner of my mouth, real soft. The wind whipped her hair up and blew it all around, brushing against my face and my neck. As she straightened up, she tucked it back behind her ears. "Thanks, sweetheart." Then it was time for me to roll around to the start line. I watched in my side-view mirror as she walked back to the spectators. She was still smiling when the flagger gave me the nod. The trick with drags like that is not to win by too much. You want to feel out the other guy and win by just enough. You go smoking the first couple of guys you race, and pretty soon nobody wants to race you, and they sure don't want to put any money on it. Billy had a Trans Am 73, I think, and for an automatic, it had some oomph. But when we came out of the squeeze between those dunes, I stepped into the CUDA and kept a car length ahead of him, all the way to the finish line. He was a loudmouth, but he was a good loser. Paid up and said, "Not too shabby considering how much weight she's hauling." Maybe next time, I said. To remind him, he pretty much always lost to me. I raced 4 more guys after that, beat a Camaro and a Charger same year as mine, and then got my ass handed to me by this scrawny Mexican kid in a Corvette with a 427 under the hood. I knew I wasn't going to beat him, which was why I only put 20 bucks on it. But I wasn't planning on getting smoked that bad. I only raced him so that when I was paying him, I could give him the number for the shop. You bring it around, I'll give you a good deal. Make it look as nice as it rides, I said. It still beat you, man. He gave me this chin-up look, like we were gonna get into it. Yeah, well, you'd look better beating me with a new paint job. After that race, Wavy and me took a break for a while. I sat up on the hood watching the other races, and she sat down on the bumper while I braided her hair. She never kept braids in it, but my sister taught me how to do it a couple different ways. Just something to do with my hands. What is this, a hair salon? This guy walking by said. I shrugged him off, but a couple minutes later he was back. You racing tonight? He said. Yeah, I took her around a couple times. You want to go? He didn't say nothing, but he walked around the Cuda looking it over. When he came back around to the hood, he was grinning. Looks like that saying is wrong. I guess you can polish a turd. The question is whether you can beat it, I said. 100 bucks. Now, I didn't have a clue what he was driving, but I didn't care.
Anybody want to walk up to me and talk that kind of shit? I'll give it a go.
I nudged Wavy and she hopped off the bumper so I could get up. 100 bucks. I stuck out my hand and we shook. See you up at the starting line, Chief.
Asshole.
Wavy said, not really under her breath. Somebody ought to wash your mouth out, little girl, he said. You want to ride with me while I go beat this guy? I said. Wavy nodded. We were going to show that jackass a thing or two. We pulled up alongside him, and I didn't know what to think. I leaned out my window and hollered, What the hell is that? Mazda RX-7, the guy yelled back. Might as well have said, Martian armpit smeller. Some kind of ricer car. It looked brand new, but newness don't count for a thing. My old Polara was proof of that. Either way, I figured if his car had any go, it'd be at the start, and I was right. When we came off the line, he was in the lead. I did like always, hung back a little to see what he had. In the squeeze, I was half a car length back from him, but I pushed on through, and coming out the other side to the open flats, I put my foot to the floor. That Barracuda damn near redlined on RPMs, the speedometer needle squeezing up past 105. Wavy was laughing out loud when we reached the finish. Guy and his rice burner ate our dust. We coasted down to the turnaround and circled back to get our winnings. I pulled up at the end of the row of cars and shut the engine off. Before we got back on the road, I wanted to make sure I hadn't rattled nothing loose. As soon as I popped the hood, a couple guys come over to look. They couldn't quite believe I'd hit 105 in the quarter mile. The guy in his Mazda came barreling in while we were standing there. He threw it into park and jumped out of the car. Didn't even bother to shut the door. You fucking bumped me, asshole. He grabbed my arm to turn me around, so I put my hand on his chest to make him step back. I didn't bump you, I said. You fucking bumped me in the tight spot. Show me. You show me where I bumped you because I want to see it. The guy stepped around me and started looking down the side of the Cuda. Now I should have been trying to throttle him back, but I went and popped off with, New car. Maybe you don't got the hang of it yet. You fucking bumped me, dickface. By then we had an audience. Some of them started looking over the cars, too. But there wasn't a mark on the Cuda, because I hadn't bumped him. He probably clipped that dune. I don't see anything, Billy said. Motherfucker! The guy kicked the front quarter panel on the Cuda. He wasn't wearing boots, just sneakers, so I figured worst he'd done was give me a scuff. But that was bullshit. I went to grab him, but he backed up, right into Wavy. She shoved him back, and he smacked her. I grabbed the front of his jacket and slammed him into the side of the Cuda. If somebody was going to put a dent in it, it'd be me. I punched him in the face until I was the only thing holding him up. Then I dropped him on the ground and kicked him a couple times for good measure. Next thing I knew, I had Billy on one arm and Wavy on the other pulling me back. You better stay down, man, Billy called to the Mazda guy. He's liable to stomp a mud hole in you. I seen him do it. Before I could, A couple of guys who knew the Mazda asshole came and got him by the arms. They walked him over and sat him on the bumper of somebody's charger. I turned around and got my head cleared enough to see Wavy standing there with a big red mark on her cheek. Nobody stopped me when I walked across to that asshole's crap car and planted my boot in the door. I kicked it half a dozen times. Stove that fucker in. If he could still drive himself home, he was gonna have to get in from the passenger side.
Wavy. I've been hit harder. The guy didn't even knock me down, but Callan went crazy. After he kicked in the car door, he came back to me with a black cloud look on his face. He leaned down to look at my cheek, close enough I could see tiny freckles of blood on his face. Not his blood.
God damn it, he said. I'm sorry, sweetheart. I'm so sorry.
He tilted my head up and brushed his thumb over my cheek.
We need to get some ice on that before your eye swells up.
People whispered as he opened the car door for me to get in. The guy in the Mazda was sitting on the bumper of another car. His face and his blue satin jacket were covered in blood.
You still owe me $100, Kellen said to him.
Then he slid into the front seat next to me and started the car. I sat in the middle and Kellen kept his arm around me while he drove. He breathed out hot and angry on top of my head.
I'm sorry, Wavy.
He apologized until I had to say something. Not your fault. He kissed the top of my head 5, 10, 15 times. At the gas station, while Kellen pumped gas, I folded my arms on the window ledge and watched him. He was calmer, but he was still under his black cloud. He leaned down to kiss me again, and I wanted to go on being kissed, but instead he went in to pay for the gas and get some ice for me. While he was inside, two police cars pulled into the gas station. One sheriff's deputy, one highway patrolman. The cops got out and walked over to the car, looked at the tags. I knew what could happen when a dark cloud and the police came together, so I opened the door and got out of the car. That way, when Kellen came out of the gas station and saw the cops, I was there to take hold of his hand, where his knuckles were bloody, even though I knew it would hurt him. I squeezed his hand hard to hold him.
Evening, officers.
Kellen squeezed my hand back, so I knew he understood me.
This your car, sir?
Yes, it is. We had a report you were causing trouble down at the Barrens south of Garringer. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't say I was causing trouble.
We had a report you assaulted somebody and vandalized his vehicle.
I was provoked,
Kellen said.
Provoked how?
That son of a bitch in the Mazda hit her.
The hesitation was because he didn't know what to call me. A lie? Daughter, sister, niece?
Or the truth. Is that true, young lady?
I stepped away from Kellen, closer to the cops and their flashlights. I pushed my hair back to show them my face. I hoped it looked as bad as it felt. From the way the cops frowned, it must have.
What was I supposed to do? Kellen said. Am I supposed to put up with some asshole punching her?
And who exactly is she? She looks a little young to be out this late, said the deputy.
I'm taking her home now.
The patrolman almost laughed, but the deputy frowned.
Let's see some ID, he said.
Kellen got out his, but I didn't have any.
And who's the girl? Wavy Quinn.
I liked my name in Kellen's mouth.
Does your mama know you're out with this guy?
The deputy said.
Yeah, her folks know she's out with me.
The two cops stepped back and whispered to each other for a few minutes. Then there was so much arguing it hurt my head. The deputy said I couldn't leave with Kellen. He said,
we need to speak to her mother,
and
we're going to have to book you anyway, so why don't we just go down to the station? You're seriously going to arrest me for whooping that asshole, because look at her. You can see he hit her. I got witnesses, so why are you riding my ass? Why aren't you out arresting him?
Don't you worry, sir. We're taking care of him,
the patrolman said.
How's that? I don't see you taking care of him. I see you hassling me over bullshit.
We just want to talk to her parents, okay?
Okay, fine. They're going to tell you what I'm telling you.
At the police station, when the deputy called the farmhouse, nobody answered. Mama had probably turned off the ringer. Then he called Sandy's trailer and nobody answered there either. I sat in a chair in the sheriff's empty office while the deputy took Kellen to charge him for assaulting the guy in the Mazda. It was only a misdemeanor, so Kellen got to post bail right there. But he still had to have his picture and his fingerprints taken. He came back wiping ink off his hands and arguing with the deputy. His name tag said Vogel,
I'm gonna have to call Children's Protective Services, Deputy Vogel said. What the hell for?
Kellen's black cloud was back.
Bigger. Because we got a minor here, and not knowing who she is, I can't let her go with you. How about this? Why don't I go get her mama? Take me an hour to get there and an hour to get back. Think you can wait to call somebody till then? I couldn't get CPS out here before then anyway. I just don't want to release her to somebody who doesn't have any business taking her.
Kellen's mouth got hard, but he didn't say anything to that. He ran his hand over my hair and said,
I'll be back, Wavy.
He glared at the deputy.
And can you get some ice for her eye?
After Kellen left, Deputy Vogel brought me a bottle of pop and an ice pack, but I didn't touch them.
Being in the sheriff's office was a lot like when Mama got arrested, but at least I was dressed with my boots on. When they arrested Mama, I had to sit in the police station for hours, just in my nightshirt, while strangers walked in and out and talked to me, and tried to touch me. The deputy didn't try to touch me, but he sat at the sheriff's desk asking me questions.
So how do you know Mr. Kellen? Or Mr. Barfoot, that's his legal name.
I stared through him.
Where did you two meet?
I crossed my arms over my chest to let Deputy Vogel know he was wasting his time.
Not at school, I'm guessing.
Ha ha ha.
You know this isn't his first assault charge?
He said. I knew. Kellen didn't get those scars on his knuckles from playing poker or fixing motorcycles. He got them from pulping guys in the face.
He's got himself quite a rap sheet. Doesn't hardly seem like the kind of guy a sweet girl like you should be hanging around.
I was so sweet. Like a lemon drop. I stared through the deputy until he had to get up and walk around the station to get away from me. It was almost 5 o'clock in the morning when Kellen came back. I recognized the sound of his boots on the tiles outside the sheriff's office, but it wasn't Mama with him. Clicky heels, but too slow. I turned and looked out the window blinds. Sandy. She looked tired but beautiful, a different kind of beautiful than Mama, who was dark. The sun was always shining on Sandy. Her hair was as blonde as mine but big and hairsprayed. She wore lots of makeup and tight jeans and a tight t-shirt with no bra.
Hello there, ma'am,
the deputy said. He sounded surprised, and I could tell he thought Sandy was sexy. He kept looking and looking at her. It made me wish I looked older. If I looked more like Sandy, the cops wouldn't think I was too young to be out with Kellen. Hi, sweetie, Sandy said to me. You ready to go home? I nodded. Wow, that guy really did a number on you.
Are you her mother?
The deputy said. Yes, I am. I'm Valerie Quinn. I'm not sure why I had to get out of bed at O'Dark 30 to come tell you that, but here I am. Sandy wasn't like me. She always sounded sweet, even when she was mad.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Quinn, but you can see why we were concerned about her being out so late with him.
No, I guess I don't see.
I wasn't sure her parents knew where she was.
Well, of course I knew she was with him. Don't you think I'd be out looking for her if I didn't know where she was?
I just wanted to be sure,
the deputy said. Is that all? Are we free to go?
Yes, ma'am, but can I just say, you ought to keep an eye on your girl. You shouldn't ought to let her out with a man like...
Thank you so very much for the advice. We're gonna go now, if that's okay. I got up when Sandy did, but before we could walk out, the deputy reached across the desk and handed me a piece of paper.
If you ever need anything, Wavy Quinn, you call me. He said.
That's what was written on the paper. His name. Deputy Leon Vogel. And his phone number. I stuck it in my pocket and followed Kellen outside to the car. Sandy stretched out in the back seat and slept all the way to the ranch, snoring a little. I curled up beside Kellen and rested my head on his leg. Even though we didn't talk, I stayed awake to keep him company. When we pulled into the yard in front of Sandy's trailer, Liam was standing on the porch, drinking a beer. Kellen got out of the car and folded the seat up so Sandy could get out of the back. Liam came down the stairs, his eyes red. If you could see into him, see what he was, his eyes would always be red. The sun was coming up when he walked across the driveway and grabbed Sandy by the arm.
What the fuck is going on? Where you been?
I got into this whole dust-up down by Geringer. Me and Wavy went out to the drags. I got in a fight, and a Belton County deputy gave me a rash of shit about Wavy being out so late. He wanted her folks to come get her.
Kellen was talking fast, so I knew he was nervous. I scooted across the seat and swung my legs out of the car, so he wouldn't be alone.
And what the fuck was Sandy doing out at the drags?
I didn't go, Liam. I went to get Wavy, she said in a soft, don't-hurt-me voice.
What the hell does that mean?
Well, Val couldn't go. You know, she couldn't go. So I went to get Wavy. I just told them I was Val and...
Oh, I see, Liam said. You went and pretended to be her mama?
Yeah, I...
You went and pretended to be Val? My wife?
Sandy was wringing her hands, not like Mama, who always stood up tall when Liam was getting ready to hit her.
It was just to get Wavy, not for...
Pow. Liam smacked her right in the mouth. Kellen could be fast when he wanted. He yanked Liam back from Sandy so hard the beer bottle flew out of Liam's hand and landed in the gravel.
You want to hit somebody? You hit me. It's my fault. Sandy didn't do nothing wrong, Kellen said.
Liam's fist crunched into Kellen's jaw, hard enough to make his head snap back.
I don't like people sneaking around behind my back, Liam said. You know that, Sandy.
We weren't sneaking, she whispered.
It wasn't sneaking.
Kellen had his mouth clenched up like his jaw hurt.
I didn't see no reason to wake you up. Sandy was up anyway, so... And what were you doing up?
That was all Liam cared about, where Sandy was.
I can't sleep when you're not here, she said.
I was just next door. You know that. Well, we didn't want to wake you, Kellen said. Sandy said she'd go. And the cops were fine. They didn't hassle her. Anyway, I'm sorry.
The cops were just...
Fucking pigs. What business is it of theirs? Like they got any business telling me what to do.
I know. Kellen finally put his hand up to his jaw.
You took this out to the drags? I didn't know you had it finished yet,
Liam said. He leaned down to look at the polish on the Barracuda's hood.
I finished it yesterday. That's why we took it out. How'd it do?
It's goddamn fast, Kellen said. He knew how to make Liam look the other direction.
I think it'll beat just about everything out there. Well, not one of them big block Corvettes, but damn near anything else. We smoked a ricer, which is how I got in a fight.
Liam laughed and looked down at his empty hand. He reached over and slapped Sandy on the leg.
Go in the house, baby, and get me and Kellen a beer.
Okay.
She hurried up the steps and slipped inside.
How fast?
Liam said.
I hit 105 in the quarter mile. Think she'd do 140 out on the flats.
Sandy came back with the beers, already open. Kellen took his and drank.
We should take it out,
Liam said.
Yeah, there's some money to be made. Plenty of guys with newer cars think they can take an old beast like this.
I touched Kellen's leg, and he shifted the beer to his other hand. When he lowered his hand to his side, I slipped mine into it.
You gotta stay out of trouble, Kellen. I got work for you to do. Can't be having the pigs hassling you on bullshit charges,
Liam said.
No, you're right.
For a few minutes they were quiet, drinking their beers.
Well,
Kellen said,
it's late. I guess I better take Wavy on up to bed. Stay out of trouble. I will.
I scooted back in the car and Kellen got behind the wheel, with the beer bottle between his legs. At the farmhouse, he didn't turn the engine off, and he was quiet, worrying. I turned around in the seat, put my arm around his neck, and laid my head on his shoulder. He sighed. After a few minutes, he put his arm around me and kissed my hair again.
I had fun, I said.
He laughed.
You got punched and arrested, and you had fun?
I nodded, careful not to bump my head against his jaw. He squeezed me tight, almost as tight as I needed. Tight enough to let me know he wasn't too afraid of Liam. Tight enough to tell me I was important to him. A little tighter, and I would know I was more important than anything else. That was what I wanted. 7. Wavy. March 1982.
When Donald and I came home from school, a shining red Corvette was parked in the driveway. Uncle Sean was standing in the front room, smiling and running his hands through his hair. Blonde, like Liam's. Mama was dressed and pretty and smiling back at him.
"Do you remember your uncle, baby?"
she said. I remembered him. He came to stay with us after Liam got arrested. Before Mama got arrested. Uncle Sean was loud, like Liam. And sneaky. He had tricks to make you smile when you didn't want to. To warn Donald to be careful, I pinched him, but he said,
"Ow, Wavy, don't,"
and went right to Uncle Sean. Laughing with his mouth open, he let Uncle Sean roll him around on the rug and tickle him. Dangerous. Then Liam came, and he and Uncle Sean slapped each other on the back. Loud thumping slaps that made my shoulders tight. I didn't want to stay there, but I didn't want to leave Donald alone with them. He was still little. Uncle Sean tried to lift Donald up the same way Kellen did and said,
"God, he's big. Are you serious? He's only 6?
He turned 6 back in January, Mama said.
I thought he was born in March.
January, Mama said. And he's big for his age. Liam picked Donald up too and said,
"He's gonna be a giant."
"Like Kellen,"
Donald shouted. Mama frowned when he said that, but I hoped he was right. "Let's have dinner," she said. She took down Grandma's cookbook and flipped through it. "Nothing belongs to you." It didn't matter that Grandma gave the cookbook to me. All Mama had to do was hold it in her hands, and it was hers.
"Oh, please, the good meatloaf,"
Sean said.
"Yeah, baby,"
Liam said. Donald, too.
"Meatloaf."
"All right, all right." It made Mama smile. Everyone asking her to feed them. Uncle Sean went to buy groceries with the list Mama wrote, and he said,
"You want to come with me, Don? Ride in the Corvette?"
I wanted to hug Donald before he left, because what if Uncle Sean didn't bring him back? But he ran out to the car before I could. They came back laughing and made a mess. Hamburger blood dripped off the counter onto the floor, and Mama and Liam snorted meth off the kitchen table where it left dust under the metal edge that was so hard to keep clean. They made so much noise, a broken plate, Liam laughing, Donald squealing. Then Uncle Sean turned on the radio and danced Mama around while the potatoes burned.
"Damn, you're gorgeous. Why don't you leave this chump and run away with me?"
Mama laughed, but her eyes looked hot and scary.
"Here now. Are you trying to romance my wife right under my nose?"
Liam said. Uncle Sean laughed and twirled Mama around, while Liam set the table. "Oh, Liam, put a plate on the table for her anyway," Mama said. Her eyes were so soft when she looked at me standing in the hallway, but I knew not to trust those eyes.
"I'm not gonna sit here with her watching us eat," Liam said. "But your Mama made the good meatloaf. You don't want any?"
Uncle Sean came toward me with a green olive in his hand, but when I ducked my head, he laughed and popped the olive in his own mouth. Pulling up chairs to the table, no one else noticed the rumble of the panhead coming up the drive. They were too busy putting food on their plates, burned mashed potatoes and greasy meatloaf, because Mama forgot to put bread in the bottom of the pan.
"Damn, did you smell the meatloaf from down the hill?"
Liam said when Kellen walked in.
"This son of a bitch can eat, in case you couldn't tell."
Uncle Sean laughed and stood up to shake hands.
"Come on, pull up a chair." "Thanks, but I just came to get Wavy."
Kellen looked at me for a second, not long enough. Liam made me invisible. I needed Kellen to see me.
"Get Wavy for what?"
Mama said.
"To go for a ride." "Uh-oh, Wavy. Donald's gonna eat your meatloaf if you don't."
Uncle Sean reached out with another green olive stolen from the meatloaf. Donald opened his mouth and took it. That scared me. What if it wasn't dangerous for Donald to be with Liam and Sean because he was one of them?
"Don't be ridiculous," Mama said. "It's dinner time, Kellen, and we've got company. She's staying here to visit with her uncle."
"Sorry, I didn't know. Maybe tomorrow, Wavy."
Kellen went out and closed the door. His boots thumped down the porch steps, but I didn't hear his bike start. He was outside waiting for me.
"Make her go up to her room,"
Liam said to Mama. I thought about going after Kellen. The only question was whether to leave Donald. I slipped my fingers between the slats of his chair and pinched him hard in the side.
Ow!
He turned around and looked at me with confused,